This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Picture this, right? It is January 2026. You are dialing into this highly anticipated earnings call, and Elon Musk is on the line.
Oh, yeah.
And usually, you know, these calls are massive hype machines, just visions of Mars, robo-taxes, the distant future. But today, he makes this remarkably blunt admission.
Right, which is pretty rare for him.
Exactly. He had promised the world that the Optimus humanoid robot would eventually cost the same as a cheap car, like around $20,000. But behind closed doors, reality just hit a brick wall.
A massive brick wall.
Because for a small production run, just buying the physical parts for one single robot is costing over $40,000.
It is just a stunning bottleneck. I mean, he admitted he simply cannot get the price down fast enough using domestic suppliers.
Wow.
Yeah, and to find a lifeline for this hardware problem, he isn't looking toward the software geniuses in Silicon Valley. He is looking across the Pacific.
Which completely flips the script on how we usually think about the future of automation. So today, we're looking at a fascinating stack of research provided by lawyer Kunjin Kim. And the mission for this deep dive is to really understand the chilling, hidden reality of the robotics race.
It's a fascinating reality, too.
It is, because the brain of the world's most advanced AI might be strictly American, but its physical body, you know, the muscles, the joints, the bones, is entirely reliant on the metal carved, baked, and assembled in China.
Yeah, to really understand Musk's $40,000 problem, you have to literally tear the robot apart and look at the bill of materials.
Right.
Morgan Stanley actually did a comprehensive breakdown on this. If we strip away all the neural networks, the cameras, and the AI chips, what are you left with? You are left with actuators.
Actuators. So that's the physical muscle of the machine.
Precisely. These are the motors, the reducers, and the specialized screws that actually allow a machine to move its arms, bend its knees, and walk.
Okay, got it.
And depending on the specific estimate, those actuators make up 50 to 70% of the entire hardware cost of a humanoid robot.
That is wild. It's kind of like building a high-end gaming PC. You go in expecting the cutting-edge graphics card or the processor to be the thing that just empties your wallet.
Right.
But instead, you find yourself going bankrupt just trying to buy the aluminum case and the cooling fans.
That's a brilliant way to frame it, actually. Let's look at the anatomy for a second. Take the hands alone.
Okay.
To give a robot human-like dexterity so it can hold a tool or, I don't know, pick up a delicate object, you need 12 independent actuators just in the hands.
Just the hands.
Just the hands. And that eats up over 17% of the total cost right there.
Yeah.
Moving up the arm, the shoulders take another 14%. Mm-hmm. The waist and pelvis take another
14%. Wow.
The real money isn't in the silicon brains, you know. It is in the metal joints.
But $40,000 just for the parts is a complete non-starter for a mass market robot? I mean, nobody's buying that. So how is the industry trying to fix this?
Well, by applying the electric vehicle playbook, China has already successfully executed this exact strategy with smartphones and EV batteries.
Oh, right.
It is a steep staircase of brutal scaling math. When you're making 1,000 robots, they cost about $100,000 each.
Mm.
At that volume, it's practically a custom laboratory job.
So every part is basically bespoke at that point.
Exactly. But when you scale up to 10,000 units, you can start building dedicated production lines, and that costs half to $50,000.
Okay.
By the time you hit 1 million units, you are standardizing these complex actuators the same way you would standardize parts for a washing machine or a refrigerator. At that scale, the cost plummets down to that $20,000 to $30,000 sweet spot.
So scale is the ultimate weapon here. And former lawmaker Kunjin Kim sources highlight some very specific companies leading this charge, like I'm looking at Tupu Group.
Yes, Tupu Group.
They are a massive auto parts giant, and they've branded themselves as a tier 0.5 supplier. Now, I know what a tier 1 supplier is in the auto industry, but what makes someone tier 0.5?
So in traditional manufacturing, a tier 1 or tier 2 supplier just sends a car company a box of individual parts.
Right.
You get a shipment of screws, a crate of motors, maybe a pallet of gears.
Right.
And then you, the automaker, have to spend massive amounts of time and labor assembling those parts on your own factory floor.
Right, which takes forever.
Exactly. Tupopa Group changed the model. They take the Tesla blueprints and assemble entire complete modules themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They don't send you a gear. They hand over a fully finished, tested robotic shoulder joint.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're operating more like a shadow robotics company than a simple parts dealer.
Which strips out layers of middleman logistics, quality assurance testing, and shipping delays for the main manufacturer. It saves an incredible amount of money.
And the financial stakes for mastering this are just astronomical. Take another company mentioned in the documents, Sanwha Intelligent Controls.
Okay, I see them here.
Rumors leaked that they allegedly landed a massive $685 million order for linear actuators.
$685 million?
Yeah. And to put that in perspective, that is enough hardware to build roughly 180,000 humanoid robots. Their stock surged 10% on that rumor alone.
Wait, pause for a second. This raises a really glaring question for me.
Sure.
The U.S. and China are currently locked in severe tech and trade tensions. We see the headlines about tariffs and export bans constantly.
Oh, absolutely.
So how is an American company quietly relying on China for roughly 70% of Optimus's supply chain value without setting off every single alarm bell in Washington?
Well, through aggressive geographical maneuvering, these key Chinese suppliers companies like Tuopu and Sanwha are quietly building massive manufacturing facilities outside of China.
They get
approvals from local investment boards and build factories in places like Thailand or, crucially, in Mexico, right near the Texas border.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, by doing this, they essentially remove the Made in China label from the physical shipping box. But the underlying intellectual property, the capital investment, and the corporate profits all remain Chinese.
Wow, so the physical hands building the robot parts are just geographically relocated to bypass the trade restrictions.
Exactly.
Now, if we want to understand how they are driving these costs down so aggressively, we need to look at the specific anatomy of the robot. Lawyer Kingjin Kim's materials outline three specific components where historical monopolies have just been absolutely crushed.
And the best place to start is with delicate movements. Think about a robot's wrists.
Okay, the wrists.
If you want a robotic arm to pour a cup of coffee without shattering the mug or violently jerking, you need a highly specialized component called a harmonic reducer.
What does a harmonic reducer actually do mechanically? I mean, I'm not an engineer.
It essentially acts as a transmission. Electric motors naturally spin very fast, but with low torque.
Right.
A harmonic reducer gears that high-speed spinning down into slow, smooth, highly controlled power. Historically, Japanese engineering absolutely dominated this specific market.
They were the gold standard.
Yes. A high-quality Japanese harmonic reducer would cost around 1,100 to 1,200 RMB.
But the landscape shifted.
Dramatically. Chinese manufacturing stepped in and scaled the production. A firm called Leader Harmonious Drive managed to drop the price of these reducers to between 600 and 750 RMB.
Wow. Almost half.
Yeah. And another company, Leifu Harmonic, push the floor even lower, averaging around 573 RMB.
That is less than half the price of the Japanese gold standard. And they aren't losing money on these deep discounts neither, right?
Not at all.
Because the sources show Leader Harmonious captured over 75% of the domestic market. By dominating that volume, their net profits actually exploded by 121.4%.
It is the EV playbook in action perfectly. Dominate the volume, lower the unit cost, and reap the massive margins.
So they've mastered the smooth movement of the wrist, but moving smoothly is totally useless if the robot can't actually feel what it's holding. Which brings us to the sense of touch.
Yes, the six-axis force sensors. If a humanoid robot is going to balance on 2 feet while walking or grip a delicate object, it needs to constantly feel the exact amount of physical pressure it is applying in every single direction.
And former lawmaker Kingjin Kim's research notes that an American company, ATI, used to hold a near-total monopoly on these sensors.
They did, yeah.
But their manufacturing process was incredibly slow. Workers were essentially looking through magnifying glasses, hand-gluing tiny strain gauges onto metal components. It was artisan, handcrafted engineering.
And as we know, artisan work does not scale to a million units.
Definitely not.
The breakthrough came when Chinese institutions applied MEMS technology, that's microelectromechanical systems.
Right.
Instead of a human handcrafting a physical gauge, they figured out how to essentially print these microscopic sensors onto silicon wafers. It's the exact same way we print computer microchips.
So they basically turn a handcrafted art project into a printing press.
Exactly. And the result you would expect followed. The price of these force sensors plummeted to just 20% of the imported cost.
20%? That's insane.
Yeah. A domestic Chinese firm called Link Touch swooped into that pricing vacuum and captured over 72% of the market. Across the entire robotics industry, China has now reached 90% self-sufficiency in these crucial six-axis sensors.
which naturally leads us to arguably the most complex mechanical challenge of all the dexterous human hand.
Replicating the human hand is just a nightmare of physics and engineering.
Oh, I bet.
You are forced to pack dozens of intricate joints, force sensors, and micromotors into a physical space no larger than a human palm, all while ensuring it has the strength to lift a heavy tool and the delicacy to hold an egg.
But the scaling is happening right now. The data shows a company called Yinshi shipped 10,000 highly precise robotic hands in 2025 alone. 10,000.
It's a huge number.
And there's another player, Linkerbot. They recently hit a $3 billion valuation and are publicly targeting $6 billion for their next round of funding.
Yeah, they're growing fast.
And their ambition isn't just building hands to fold laundry. They're designing these robotic hands for incredibly high-value, high-precision tasks. We are talking about playing complex piano pieces or even assisting in delicate dental surgery.
Gives you a really clear window into how fast the capability curves upward once those initial cost barriers are removed.
Okay, let's step back and look at the whole picture for a second.
Sure.
If the sensors are down 80% in cost, the wrists are half price, and dexterous hands are being localized by the tens of thousands, why was Musk on that Q1 2026 call complaining that he is at the mercy of the dumbest, slowest parts of the supply chain? What is the actual bottleneck keeping the price at $40,000?
The primary bottleneck is a piece of metal about the size of your finger. It is called a planetary roller screw.
A screw.
Yeah, a screw. This is the absolute Achilles heel of the entire humanoid supply chain.
I am looking at a diagram of this thing right now from lawyer Kunjin Kim's sources. And to a layperson like me, it just looks like a thick, threaded metal rod. Why is a screw the thing holding back the robot revolution?
Because of what it has to endure. When a robot bends its knees to squat or walks up a flight of stairs, that is linear motion pushing and pulling.
Right.
But the motors inside the robot spin in a circle. You need a mechanism that translates the rotary spinning of the motor into immense linear pushing power.
And a regular threaded screw just can't do that.
Not at this scale. A normal ball screw creates way too much friction and just wears out. A planetary roller screw uses multiple smaller threaded rollers that orbit around a central shaft. It functions similarly to planets orbiting a sun.
Ah, hence the name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because of all those contact points, it can handle massive static loads like 3 times more weight than a standard ball screw, and it lasts 15 times longer under grueling conditions.
The outline notes that a single Optimus robot requires 14 of these planetary roller screws.
14 of them. And because of the insane engineering tolerances required, they currently cost between $1,350 and $2,700 each.
Wait, you were telling me a piece of threaded metal costs $2,700. That is staggering.
It is. Those 14 screws make up nearly 19% of the entire hardware cost of the robot.
Wow.
And here is the geopolitical kicker. Despite all of China's overwhelming dominance in scaling sensors and harmonic reducers, their localization for these planetary roller screws is stuck at a dismal 20 to 30%.
Really? So where do they get them?
For the high-end versions needed for a heavy humanoid robot, they still have to import them from specialized foundries in Switzerland, Sweden, or Japan.
It is the ultimate bottleneck. It is like designing a state-of-the-art sports car engine, perfectly tuning the aerodynamics in a wind tunnel, but your entire assembly line is frozen because you are waiting on a 19th-century blacksmith to hand-forge the lug nuts.
That's pretty much exactly what's happening.
But if they could figure out MEMS printing for sensors, why can't they just reverse engineer and copy the screws?
Because they're facing two massive roadblocks that you just cannot solve with cheap labor or basic software.
Yeah.
First is the metallurgy itself.
The metal.
Yeah. When these roller screws are operating inside a heavy robot, they generate intense heat and microscopic friction. You need incredibly specific, highly advanced steel alloys that can survive that environment without degrading.
Okay, that makes sense.
China's special steel smelting and advanced heat treatment technologies simply haven't caught up to the centuries of refinement in European and Japanese foundries.
And the second roadblock.
Physical manufacturing equipment. To make a high-end roller screw function properly, you need to grind the metal threads at a nanometer level of precision.
Right.
To accomplish that, you need what the industry calls C3-grade, ultra-precise grinding machines. China does not natively manufacture these machines. They rely on imports for roughly 95% of their high-precision grinding equipment.
Oh, wow, 95%.
And nations like Japan and European countries heavily restrict the export of these advanced machines to China for strategic and military reasons. It is a hard physical ceiling.
But the research highlights that they are making some wild, expensive bets to break through that ceiling, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, Hangzhou Jinjin is building a massive, dedicated factory designed to pump out 1 million of these screws every single year. Their stated public goal is to force a price down from 12,000 RMB to a shocking 635 RMB.
Which is incredibly ambitious.
Yeah. Now, industry analysts think getting down to 1 or 2,000 RMB is much more realistic, but the sheer ambition of that factory is staggering.
It is a total brute force approach to a microscopic precision problem. You also see companies like Shuanglin acting almost out of desperation.
What did they do?
Well, when they couldn't import the high-end European grinding machines they needed because of the embargoes, they literally bought an entire grinding machine company, Wuxi Kazakhstan, just to bypass the restrictions and acquire the technology outright.
Which perfectly illustrates how desperate the supply chain is for these heavy-duty components. And former lawmaker King Jin Kim points out that we see the exact same physical struggle with the RV reducers.
Yes, the RV reducers.
Tell me about those.
Well, while the harmonic reducers handle the delicate, lightweight movements of the wrists and arms, the RV reducers are the heavy load bearers. These go into the hips, the knees.
The parts taking the real weight.
Right, the parts of the robot taking the real punishing physical impact of a 150-pound machine walking on concrete. And Japan's Naptesco still completely rules this domain.
But wait, if the Chinese firms can copy the wrist reducers, why is the hip reducer so impossible to replicate?
It all comes down to a concept in manufacturing called tacit knowledge.
Tacit knowledge, like the unwritten rule.
Precisely. It is the deep metallurgical intuition developed by Japanese engineers over 70 years of trial and error.
Oh, interesting.
When you bake the metal gears for an RV reducer, you face a paradox. The surface of the gear needs to be incredibly hard so it doesn't scratch or wear down under friction.
Right.
But the core of that exact same piece of metal needs to remain tough and slightly flexible so that when the robot jumps and lands, the gear absorbs the shock impact instead of shattering like glass.
You know, it reminds me of watching a master baker.
How so?
Well, you can give a commercial factory the exact recipe for a sourdough loaf, the precise weight of the flour, the exact temperature of the oven, but the commercial bread will never taste like the master baker's bread.
Ah, I see what you mean.
Because the baker knows by the physical feel of the dough when the humidity is right or when it needs just another minute of kneading. You can't write that feeling down on a blueprint.
That is a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Getting those two contradictory properties into one piece of steel isn't just following a recipe. It is hands-on, generational craftsmanship.
And you can't just copy that overnight.
Exactly. A Chinese firm like Shuanglin is rapidly gaining market share. They hit nearly 25% of the market in 2024. They can reverse engineer the physical shape of the Japanese gear perfectly.
But the shape isn't the secret.
Exactly. When you put that cloned, identical-looking gear into an Optimus robot, and the robot picks up a 40-pound box and starts walking, the Chinese parts simply wear out faster.
They just degrade.
Right. They lose their microscopic precision under the grueling stress because the foundries lack that deeply ingrained, unwritten metallurgical intuition of how to perfectly bake the steel.
This struggle to master the physical metal brings us to the ultimate paradox of the humanoid robot industry, as highlighted throughout lawyer Kung Jin Kim's analysis.
It really is a paradox.
Building these robots isn't just a question of scaling factory capacity. It's fundamentally about geography, natural resources, and global leverage, which brings us to the rare earth choke point.
Yeah, to understand the gravity of this, we have to look at the geopolitical earthquake that happened in April 2025.
The export controls.
Yes. China placed strict export controls on 7 heavy rare earth elements. We are talking about critical materials like samarium, terbium, and dysprosium.
Now, for someone who isn't a material scientist, why do those specific elements matter to a walking robot?
Because every single humanoid robot requires about 4 to 5 kilograms of ultra-high-performance magnets to run its electric motors.
Okay.
If you want a motor small enough to fit inside a robotic arm, but strong enough to lift heavy weights, you absolutely need those specific heavy rare earths to create the magnetic fields.
So as impartial observers looking purely at the mechanics of the supply chain, the cause and effect of these trade policies is mathematically staggering.
It's huge.
If Tesla utilizes the existing Chinese supply chain for these components, Their actuator costs at around $46,000. But if they attempt to completely pull out of China to avoid these export risks and tariffs, that cost skyrockets to $131,000 per robot.
It nearly triples the cost.
Musk's dream of a mass-market $20,000 robot just dies instantly at that price point.
It is a profound geopolitical trap. Now, the West is actively trying to adapt to this new reality. We are seeing major strategic shifts right now.
Like what?
Well, Tesla is moving their AI chip production away from TSMC over to Samsung's facility in Texas to secure the semiconductor side. They're also actively trying to build non-Chinese magna supply chains, sourcing raw materials in the U.S. and Australia.
But finding the raw metal buried in the ground in Australia is really only half the battle, right?
It is barely the beginning. Digging rare earths out of the dirt is just a mining problem.
Right.
But having the massive economic capacity, the specialized chemical facilities, and the environmental permits to refine that raw dirt into usable ultra-high-performance magnets is a completely different hurdle.
It's a massive undertaking.
It is a geopolitical bottleneck that, for the moment, keeps the future of American robotics waiting on materials regulated by Beijing.
So if you're watching this industry evolve, what does this actually mean for the future we've been promised? Let's synthesize this whole journey. The 2026 humanoid robot race isn't just happening in the pristine, temperature-controlled labs of Silicon Valley where engineers are typing out the latest neural network code.
Far from it, yeah. The real battleground dictating when these robots actually arrive in our homes is on the bustling factory floors in Suzhou.
Right.
It's hidden in the unwritten, heavily guarded secrets of Japanese metallurgy. It's playing out in the high-stakes, geopolitical tug-of-war over rare earth magnets and export controls.
So the next time you scroll through your feed and see a viral video of a humanoid robot doing a flawless backflip or, you know, delicately folding a t-shirt, you'll understand the invisible forces at play.
Exactly.
The real miracle isn't just the artificial intelligence processing the visual data. The miracle is the globally tangled web of perfectly machined, rapidly depreciating metal, gears, and screws that are actually keeping that machine upright and functioning.
It is a triumph of physical global supply chains just as much as it is a triumph of software.
It really is incredible to peel back the curtain on this, and it leaves me with this final kind of wild thought to mull over.
What's that?
We talked extensively about tacit knowledge, the physical intuition of a master craftsman baking steel over decades, knowing exactly how the metal should feel, how it responds to heat and pressure.
The human element of heavy industry.
Exactly. If that human touch in metallurgy is the final bottleneck preventing these machines from being cheap enough to mass replace human labor, how deeply ironic is it that the ultimate hurdle for building artificial humans is the irreplaceable, uncodable touch of actual human hands?
It is a beautiful and fascinating paradox to consider.
Something to think about the next time you see one of those metal machines walking toward you.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.